Welcome to CRE Radio with Howard Klein, radio for and about the commercial real estate professional. Our focus is exploring issues facing landlords and tenants, property and asset managers, investors, brokers, lenders, and everyone in the industry. Our style is conversation over coffee with highly experienced commercial real estate professionals. Over 35 years, Howard's legal and commercial real estate practice has centered on broker, leasing, and property management issues. CRE Radio is presented with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our audience. Access our archive shows, upcoming schedule, and engaging articles at creradio.com or subscribe to the show on iTunes by searching for CRE Radio. And now, here's Howard Klein.
And welcome to CRE Radio. We don't have a topic today. Actually, we have a very special featured guest, David Henry, an icon of real estate. David doesn't think that he is, but I'm certain that he is. And just the mere fact that he doesn't think that he's an icon probably gets him about 20% there. Our call-in number is 619-393-6492. That's 619-393-6492. Press 1 to talk. You can reach us on Twitter at CRE Radio, or you can leave comments on our website at creradio.com/David Henry. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Howard.
Let me give a brief introduction of what our Icon of Real Estate series is about. This conversation today will be a bit of a sojourn or trip back in time, and we're going to explore David's background and, well, what has made him the success that he is. I spent some time pre-interviewing David, and much of that time I listened to David thinking about, well, all the things that I could have done differently or better. It was a terribly humbling experience. Let me tell you a little bit about David. David was appointed Chief Executive Officer of Kimco in November of 2009, and he currently continues as President and CEO, a position he assumed in November of 2008. He has been Vice Chairman of the Board of Directors since May of 2001. In his current role, David is responsible for the overall strategic execution of the company. I need to ask him what that actually entails. David also joined Kimco Realty after 23 years at General Electric, where he was Chief Investment Officer, Senior Vice President of GE Capital Real Estate, and Chairman of GE Capital Investment Advisors, as well as responsible for helping manage real estate investments totaling more than $20 billion in 11 countries worldwide. With that value, it sounds like we should have David in Congress right now. So, without any delay, let's welcome David to the show, as I've already thanked him. David, why don't we really kind of delve into your background that led up to the success that you are? And, you know, what was it about your childhood that helped shape what you are now as a CEO?
Well, I guess you might find it interesting, and I like to tell this at cocktail parties, but my father was a career foreign service diplomat, and so every 2 years he would be stationed in a different country, and he was a Soviet affairs expert. So I actually was the youngest American at Stalin's funeral in 1953. I was 4 years old. Back then, at the height of the Cold War, all the Americans lived in the embassy, and I spent 2 years playing with the Marine Guards in the basement, and maybe that's formative to some extent. But because my father was a career foreign service officer, we moved around, and I spent time in Berlin as well as Iceland. And then when I got to my high school years, I was sent off to prep school, a boarding school. At the time, it was an all-male boarding school called Lawrenceville in Lawrenceville, New Jersey, which is near Princeton, New Jersey. And I guess that that was formative to the extent it was an all-boys prep school. And we were able to see women twice a year. They would ship in girls by bus from girls' school. You would reach in a bowl and pick out a number, and they would do the same, and that would be your date for the night. So by the time you graduated prep school, you were certainly ready for a co-ed college, and that's what I did. I went off to a small liberal arts college called Bucknell in Pennsylvania, and from there I proceeded to get my MBA at the University of Miami in Florida. And from that point, joined the real estate investment trust world with a mortgage REIT called Republic Mortgage. And then, let's see, in 1978, I came back up to the Northeast and joined GE and spent 23 great years there. This was the go-go years of Jack Welch. And then in 2001, I joined Kimco, and it's been a great ride.
Well, let's talk a little bit about prep school. What kind of effect, other than the fact that you were desperate to get away to college and see women, what effect did prep school have on you?
Well, it's interesting. Now, this was in the years 1964 through 67. So it was the beginning of the Vietnam War. It was the beginning of the hippie culture and so forth. So I saw some of that at work at that time. Prep school, maybe because everybody's so far away from home, it caused a lot of rebellion, and I can remember watching people misbehave, maybe get it out of their system before they went on to college. But there, it wasn't prep school, at least for me, and what I saw wasn't quite the studious place you might think a preparatory school is supposed to be for college. So I saw that at work, and so by the time I got to college, I was maybe I had sowed some oats a little bit at prep school, so I was ready to study a little more in college.
Were you studious in college?
I, for the time, and which was a time when nobody worried about jobs, honestly, it was a much easier time. I perhaps studied more than most, but certainly less than the kids do today.
I wasn't a particularly studious person. You had previously mentioned your mother and the influence that she had on you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, my mother's personality was just so supportive. My father was from the old school, children should be seen and not heard, and my mother balanced him out very well, and just she made it clear that you were her top priority, and that she was there to support you in all ways imaginable, and it just emphasized to me how important it is to try to be a good parent and be that emotional as well as financial, I guess, safety net for your children.
Has that translated at all in your professional life?
Yeah, I've always tried to. I guess I'll give you a couple analogies. I've always loved that saying. It's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. I do deeply believe that that's not only is it the right thing to do, but you're a little happier if you follow that. And I still remember one of my good customers from GE telling me when I moved over to Kimco and to become eventual CEO, he said that when you obtain that kind of title, people will blow a lot of smoke in your face, and the key is not to inhale it. So I've always tried very hard not to not to inhale it. I'm not sure I'm 100% successful, but I do try. And I think, you can be nice and successful and not a pushover in business and still be nice.
Good guys can finish first then.
Yes, I do believe that. And I've seen some of the people I've worked for fit in that category, true gentlemen and so forth that everybody respected and they became a little bit of a role model for me. And of course, I also saw other sides, especially coming from a 23-year a career at GE, where there were lots of sharp elbows and a very strict corporate ladder to maneuver your way up. So it was a culture where you saw lots of the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Well, we'll get back to that issue as soon as we come back from our messages.
Commercial brokers spend more time selling and less time organizing with Building Blocks CRE. Built by brokers for brokers, Building Blocks CRE is the dead simple, best business organizer out there. Set up and learn in minutes. Track deals, contacts, listings, and more. Easier than ever before. Right now, save 10% when you visit blockcre.com. Use promo code Howard. Remember, Building Blocks CRE. Easy to learn, easy to use. See for yourself. Log on to blockscre.com.
If you're a retail tenant, you really should belong to the NRTA. They're an organization of the tenants, by the tenants, and for the tenants. Whether you manage a large portfolio or just a mom and pop, the National Retail Tenants Association is on your side. NRTA exists to protect retail tenants everywhere and to make sure landlord billings are correct. Don't wait for your next statement of CAM charges to arrive. Log on to retailtenants.org. That's retailtenants.org. Find out more today. For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio, via email to questions@creradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Kimco CEO David Henry. During the break, I was listening to one of our sponsors, that's the National Retail Tenants Association, and I really thought how poetic. I've got a sponsor who's announcing, if you think your landlord is overcharging you, join the NRTA. That is a little poetic, although knowing you as I have known now, if there are any mistakes on CAM charges, I'm sure it's not intentional.
Absolutely, and we try very hard to be good partners and good landlords with our retailers and our tenants. Obviously, your best prospect for empty space is somebody that's already leasing space with you. So you want to make sure you have the very best relationship with your tenants. So we do work hard at that.
Oh, that's so true, because tenants, if you're in a shopping center, tenants all talk among themselves, and it's tough enough to make everybody happy by doing all the right things, but if you're doing some wrong things, it makes life very difficult to manage the center.
Yes, and all else being equal, you want them to choose Kimco over somebody else, so it's important to have those relationships. And given our size, with some 15,000 leases and 8,000 individual tenants, we can build those relationships.
You know, that's something I'd like to talk to you about in terms of size and how difficult that might be to manage people going down the food chain, so to speak, so that everything is consistent. But before we get to that, let's get back to the conversation about you. How did you first get involved in real estate?
Well, I think like most people, I kind of stumbled into commercial real estate when I was in a business school. The dean of the business school happened to be a trustee of a real estate investment trust, a mortgage trust called Republic. And asked me if I wanted to intern there for a summer. I said, sure. And after the internship was over and I got my MBA, they were nice enough to hire me full-time. And I can still remember excitedly calling my father saying, Dad, I just got this job with a real estate investment trust, and they're going to pay me $11,000 a year. And my father said, real estate, isn't that a cyclical business? And I said, no, Dad, we're putting out $1 million a week. And of course, 3 years later, the company laid off 80% of the people, but luckily I was paid so little, they didn't lay me off. But it was my first lesson in the cyclicality of commercial real estate.
Oh, isn't that the truth? What were your first reactions when you got involved in real estate? Was it interesting, disappointing, frustrating?
I think it's just a wonderful industry. And as people know, every deal is different. It's a people business. You form relationships. There's usually travel involved. There's large numbers involved. At GE, we had many people transfer into our division, commercial real estate. Very few people wanted to transfer out. And this was all kinds of businesses that GE had, including credit cards and jet engines and locomotives and all kinds of other types of businesses. But commercial real estate really is a very interesting and fascinating career, and lucky for some of us, it's not rocket science. It's pretty simple in terms of the rough analysis of net operating income and things like that. You don't need an engineering background or be a scientist to figure out our business, but you do need some people skills and relationship skills and some common sense, I would argue.
When you were at GE, you were there for 23 years. How did you first get hired at GE? Did they recruit you, or did you just kind of move on, or what?
No, a guy that I had worked with at Republic left Republic several years before me and joined GE, and he recommended me to GE, and I came up to Connecticut, which is the headquarters of both GE and GE Capital, and I interviewed and got the job, and that was in 1978. And it worked out very well. In 78, we were coming out of a downturn in the cycle, so we had a pretty good run, notwithstanding prime hitting 21%. Real estate had a pretty good run until, I'd say the mid-80s in Texas and stuff, and then all the way to the early 90s for the Northeast. I ran the Eastern region at that time, and at the time Texas was falling apart, we didn't have a single delinquent loan, but it moved north, and by 1990, 91, customers were coming in telling us they couldn't quite make the next payment, so that was another bad cycle, the early 90s, and if people remember the RTC days and so forth. So it was a fun place to be, and GE was very good to us. Even though we lost lots of money in the downturn, they effectively doubled the bet. Gary Wendt and Jack Welch were contrarians and opportunistic by nature, so they let us invest literally billions of dollars in real estate that the federal government through the RTC was selling, and GE made a small fortune by being a courageous buyer at the bottom.
Let's pause briefly for a word from our sponsors. You're listening to CRE Radio. Stay with us.
What's next for commercial real estate and retail marketing? Pop-up retail, and it's here now. PopUpInsider.com is the premier online resource for owners to advertise and fill properties for temporary use. PopUpInsider.com is where merchants and brands shop for temporary locations. See for yourself. Go to PopUpInsider.com, create your own account, market your empty spaces, or view available locations for your business, all on one convenient site, PopUpInsider.com.
Manage a shopping center? Always looking for new ideas? Tactics. Tactics Magazine is the idea magazine for shopping center marketing directors all over the world. Exciting promotions, gift with purchase programs, and full-blown ad campaigns. Every edition of Tactics is packed with features, ideas, and news you can use to get the word out and grow your numbers. How can you manage a shopping center without your tactics? Log on to tacticsmagazine.com. Today would be good. tacticsmagazine.com.
If you have questions or a point you'd like to make during the live show, call in at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue to speak live with Howard and his guests. That's 619 area, 393-6492. During the live show, then press 1 to be placed in queue.
Welcome back to CRE Radio. We're speaking with our guest, David Henry. We left off with you in GE, what was it like working in the Jack Welch era?
Well, GE, led by Jack Welch during those years, was a very demanding culture, if you will. They would reward you well if you did well, but it was a place where they encouraged people to move on if they weren't performing very well. And in fact, Welch is known for his theory that you should get rid of the bottom 10%. You should force rank your employees and get rid of the bottom 10% every year. So it's a little bit of a cruel culture because you could be performing very well for a great boss for 10 years and then get a new boss in your 11th year and be ranked at the bottom and being asked to move on. So it was a tough culture from that aspect. But on the other side of the coin, when I joined in 1978, GE Capital was 2% of GE's earnings. When I left in 2001, GE Capital was 55% of GE's
wow.
earnings. So it was an explosive time of growth under Gary Wendt and Jack Welch for GE Capital. And we grew exponentially in many of the areas, including commercial real estate. And we went from being a lender to also an equity owner.
We discussed the grumpy versus cheerful outlook and a sense of humor, that you learned this attitude at GE. Why don't you discuss that a little bit and perhaps tell us some stories?
Well, I always encourage people I talk to, especially young people, that always expect the advice to work hard and as a way to succeed. I come at it a little differently because I did see the very brightest people at GE fail because they were not happy people. Nobody wants to be around a grumpy person. And that's just a fact of life. And so you should make an effort, even if in your heart you're not that cheerful, to be cheerful as well as to do a good job in your work. And if you're a manager or a leader, it's especially important that you be cheerful in a tough time. If you're not making your numbers or the cycle's turning down and it doesn't look good out there. You need to keep up the morale and the spirits of the people that work for you. So it's important that even if things are falling apart, that you be cheerful and convey a sense of optimism and that we'll get through this. And a sense of humor is a corollary of that. If you've got a good sense of humor, that's very helpful in everything from tough negotiations to getting along with employees.
A good sense of humor gets you to smile. So
exactly, and it breaks it. I've seen it be such an effective negotiating tool. If there's a huge wide gap between sellers and buyers, lenders and borrowers, it's a way to break the ice, and it's a good way to find the middle ground. You kind of wish the politicians had more of a sense of humor in Washington today. It would be easier for them to compromise.
Wouldn't that be nice? That would be a great attitude changer. You why don't you tell us a story of the how you learned the because were you always cheerful? Because you are now, or at least it seems.
Yeah, like I think I'm naturally a little bit cheerful, but you have to work at it. And in situations, somebody once told me about in a marriage. Of course, it takes both sides working hard at it every day and so forth. And somebody said, but some days you just don't feel like it. So that's what you got to keep in mind. I guess a story. It's not necessarily a GE cheerful story, but it goes back to the suggestion for Washington. We met with Senator Orrin Hatch as part of promoting the Main Street Fairness Initiative we're trying to get done, and he was bemoaning the state of affairs between Republicans and Democrats today. And he told us a story that in the old days when Senator Edward Kennedy was alive. Senator Kennedy would get up on the floor of the Senate and eviscerate Senator Hatch, calling him the most conservative, evil, right-wing ideologue, Attila the Hun, and so forth. And then as soon as the Senate day was over, he'd come up to Orrin and smile and say, "How'd I do? How'd I do?" And then they'd go. And then they'd go have a drink, and there was many laws that were co-sponsored by both of them. So I think you need more of that.
Oh my goodness, that's a good story. Part of the elements of being a good manager is listening. It sounds a bit of an oxymoron. Let's talk about listening.
Yeah, I think that's important, because the other thing that irritates people besides being grumpy and mad and angry is people that tend to monopolize a conversation or even lecture and be too forceful trying to make their point. So even if there's a good point at a certain point, the other people don't listen. So it's important to remember conversations should be balanced. And if you listen and respectfully listen, that's a way to achieve things. If you're too determined to make your point and too determined to interrupt when you see a weakness or opening, that generally doesn't end well long term. I mean, you become somebody that people don't want to meet with, even if you're right. So listening is important, and it's something I've tried to do is be respectful and listen, especially if you're in a new job and you're given a senior position. You don't want to go in there right away and start making judgments and start telling people what to do. You want to spend your first 6 months actually listening to other people about what they think is being done right, what they think is being done wrong, what can be done to improve things. So I think listening is an important part of people's careers.
How do you get that? It's a good thing to listen to people. I get that. But some people just don't talk much. How do you get them to talk?
Well, you ask very specific questions, and you can encourage them to continue to go by everything from body language to statements that said, "Oh, you're on the right track. Let me hear more." That sort of stuff. So you can certainly bring out people that might be shy.
Well, I would think that the most important thing about getting someone to talk is that you genuinely care about what they're going to say. And I don't know if there are gimmicks. I suppose there are gimmicks, but if you really want to hear what they're going to say, that kind of helps people opening up, don't you think?
Absolutely, and a genuine caring. I'll tell you another thing you have to work at, because a lot of us are not very good at that, and that is taking the time to know people's names, remember their names, perhaps remember something about their family, wives, children, that goes a long way for people to think you genuinely care. And I've seen some people that have an innate ability to do that, and other people that don't have an ability to do that, but they work at it. And other people that can't be bothered, and so you can see the awkwardness when they don't know somebody's name that works for them, things like that. So that's something to bear in mind.
Absolutely, absolutely. Stay with us for more with David Henry right here on CRE Radio.
Attention commercial real estate brokers and professionals. Have you ever struggled to find the true ownership behind a commercial property? What about finding the phone number, email, and name of the actual decision maker? ProspectNow.com tracks this information on more than 10 million commercial and multifamily properties nationwide. Howard's listeners are invited to a 3-day free trial. Simply go to ProspectNow.com and enter the promotion code Howard.
That's ProspectNow.com.
Commercial brokers spend more time selling and less time organizing with Building Blocks CRE. Built by brokers, for brokers, Building Blocks CRE is the best business organizer out there. Set up and learn in minutes. Track deals, contacts, listings, and more. Easier than ever before. Right now, save 10% when you visit BlocksCRE.com. Use promo code Howard. Remember, Building Blocks CRE. Easy to learn, easy to use. Log on to BlocksCRE.com.
If you have questions or a point you'd like to make during the live show, call in at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue to speak live with Howard and his guests. That's 619 area, 393-6492. During the live show, then press 1 to be placed in queue.
Well, welcome back. We're having a conversation with David Henry as an icon of real estate, and we're hearing about David's background and some stories. And speaking of stories, we were just talking about listening, and you like to tell a story about hand grenades and how you learned how to listen.
Well, it was I worked for a very tough boss that I didn't like at GE for a period of time, but he did help me recognize something about myself that wasn't easy to hear, but he was right, and that he pulled me aside one day and he said, you know, Henry, you're great at sitting back and then throwing a hand grenade into a conversation, and that's not the best thing to do. And so you start to ask yourself, well, do you do that to make yourself look smart? Why are you hanging back and then all of a sudden making a point that might make somebody else feel badly or whatever? So I sometimes somebody says something to you that resonates. So I've always been careful about that. And so even if somebody makes an obvious mistake or something, I'm more diplomatic perhaps than I used to be.
Let's talk about criticism as another element of your success or the lack of criticism. What are your thoughts on criticism, either giving it or receiving it?
Well, certainly giving it, you have to be constructive, and GE was good about that. They trained us all in reviewing employees. Even if you have a tough message, at the end, you start off with what you think an employee did well and accomplished, and then you might lead into areas that GE used to euphemistically call them development needs, but you meter in any real criticism and you balance it with some good thoughts. In terms of receiving criticism, I think it's important to really listen and maybe that criticism is fair and not be defensive.
Or set in your ways.
That's right. I mean, you know, maybe whoever's criticizing you has a fair point.
Learning at any age. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that's evidently very, very, very true. In fact, it's probably more important as you get higher in the food chain, as you would say, and older and more set in your ways to be more open than perhaps when you were a young hard charger. So it's just very important to listen and learn and make sure that somebody may well be more right than you.
I find it easier to learn and to be open to learning at my age now than when I was younger. What about you?
Again, I think you work at it. And in general, I would say the older people get, the less likely they are to listen and take criticism very well. I think older people in general are a little more set in their ways and a little grumpier than younger people. I think it actually gets harder.
Really? Well, I suppose so. Maybe that makes some of us a little bit different from others. You know, it's one of the great things about doing the radio show, that this is as much a learning experience for me as it is a teaching experience. And it's just fascinating. It just never stops for me.
I think that's a great attitude, and everybody should work at that. But that's not the case with a lot of people that sit at their desks every day.
You know, you're probably right about that. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about Kimco and the differences between the environment at Kimco and that at GE.
The Institute of Real Estate Management believes good management matters and that well-managed properties pay big dividends. IRM delivers the power of knowledge and recognizes the importance of sharing it. IRM serves real estate professionals who manage all property types. They're dedicated to delivering cutting-edge networking and educational opportunities for every stage of your career. How can IRM help you? To count the ways, log on to IRM Orange County. That's IREMOC.org. Learn more today. Do more business with your biggest clients. Techniques Marketing has perfected exciting new ways to increase your revenue with all your key accounts, way beyond trial and error. And we've done it with some of the biggest companies in America. Look, if you're happy with your numbers, great. If not, let's talk. Visit TechniquesMarketing.com. TECH, that's the tech, NIQUES. There you've got the Neeks. TechniquesMarketing.com. For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio, via email to questions@CREradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619 area 393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
Welcome back to CRE Radio, and we are here with David Henry. And we're now going to talk about Kimco, which is a S&P 500 company, and how that compares to working at General Electric Real Estate. David?
Sure. Even though Kimco is large within the real estate industry, I think we have an equity market cap of $9 billion. We're a peanut compared to GE, with 300 some thousand people. We have closer to 700. And what's nice about Kimco in comparison and contrasting it with GE is it still has a very mom and pop culture, very, very employee-friendly, open door policy, and that culture was really created by Milton Cooper, one of the founders, who remains our executive chairman, and he just fosters a much more informal and welcoming type of culture, where as GE you were thrown into the ring, and it was bare knuckles in a lot of occasions, and the fittest survived, and GE liked it that way in many cases.
What motivated you to go to Kymco?
Milton Cooper, as I mentioned, the founder, or one of the co-founders, in 2001, when I left GE, and needed to name a successor. He was in his early 70s, and Wall Street was looking for a succession plan. So he encouraged me to join him with the assurance that I would become CEO at some point, and I did it, and it's worked out great.
Well, how did you meet him?
I met Milton in the mid '80s. We financed a portfolio of shopping centers that he purchased in West Virginia. I think they were the first centers that Kymco had bought in West Virginia, and GE provided the financings, and we were subsequently repaid. But Milton and I stayed friends and developed a nice relationship.
No, that's a good way to switch from one company. What's your favorite story about Milton? One that won't get you fired.
No. I mean, I'm not sure I have a specific story for you, but he generally cares about people. If any kind of employee has a serious illness, Milton will drop everything. The two of his sons control a company called ProHealth, which is one of the largest health organizations in Long Island with more than 400 doctors, and he just makes personally sure, including driving the people over to the nearest ProHealth office to make sure they're taken care of. He's always believed in the good partner concept. As I mentioned, he's a co-founder with Marty Kimmel, and they formed their 50-50 ownership of Kymco on a handshake, and they operated on a handshake until we went public in 1991.
You've mentioned this partnership concept. Could you describe that a little bit more? You know, what do you mean by partnership?
Well, I guess when you're making decisions that impact, in our case, institutional partners or our tenants, retailers, or our lenders or our investment bankers, Milton has always said, you know, ask yourself is what you're deciding. Are you being a good partner? And I think that's a good philosophy in general to follow, because the world is round, and if you treat people well and you leave a little on the table, you know, you don't have to take it all. You can make somebody feel fine by leaving a little bit on the table. It doesn't need to be 100% win. So I think that's a good philosophy.
How does that translate in terms of employers and employees?
The same thing. If you treat your employees as co-owners with an equity stake in the company, I think you're far better off than treating them as just salaried employees. In our case, every employee has stock options and a little bit of an equity stake in the company, and it means everybody's invested in making sure that the company succeeds. It's a good business model.
How do you get employees to think in that fashion, and with even without the incentives? I'll give you an example. When I was at Big Bear Markets, I'd walk into each market, and I cared about how everything looked. I mean, I didn't know anything about the supermarket business. Ultimately, I did learn some. But I cared if it looked messy. I cared if there were grapes on the floor. Lord knows how many people slipping on grapes there is in supermarkets. I mean, it's incredible. You know, I I just felt like I was an owner, but I think that that started from me rather than the other way around. How do you get employees to buy into that concept? Or is it that you look for employees who have that attitude to begin with?
Well, in your case, I suspect if you saw the general manager of the store bending over and picking up grapes that were on the floor or trash and so forth, it made you feel more empowered to do that. So you lead by example, if you will. So I think that's the best way to do something like that. You can't expect people to have that attitude if you don't.
I suppose so, but it's somehow or another, it's been a very difficult process, you know, with the businesses that I've owned and operated. You know, sometimes some people just had the right partnership attitude. They cared about everything that they did. They cared about the quality of the work that they did. It was important to them, not so much that they got paid more, but that their work reflected well upon them. Almost like they had an inner guideline.
That's the difference between good employees and bad employees, and I'm not sure you can detect that when you hire somebody initially. It's something you evaluate over time. And we've all made good hires, and we've all made bad hires. I'm not sure that a lot of embedded personalities and work ethic and integrity is something you could teach.
So I'm forever going to be trying to learn and figure that out. As I said, dealing with you on this conversation for me is a terribly humbling experience. And we're going to hear more about humbling experiences when we come back. Actually, it's not so much about a humbling experience. I'd like to talk a little bit about those people and those events that inspired you when we come back.
Manage a shopping center? Always looking for new ideas? Tactics. Tactics Magazine is the idea magazine for shopping center marketing directors all over the world. Exciting promotions, gift with purchase programs, and full-blown ad campaigns. Every edition of Tactics is packed with features, ideas, and news you can use to get the word out and grow your numbers. How can you manage a shopping center without your tactics? Log on to tacticsmagazine.com. Today would be good. Tacticsmagazine.com.
Attention commercial real estate brokers and professionals. Have you ever struggled to find the true ownership behind a commercial property? What about finding the phone number, email, and name of the actual decision maker? ProspectNow.com tracks this information on more than 10 million commercial and multifamily properties nationwide. Howard's listeners are invited to a 3-day free trial. Simply go to prospectnow.com and enter the promotion code Howard.
That's prospectnow.com.
For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CRE Radio or via email to questions@CREradio.com.
Welcome back to CRE Radio, and we are speaking with David Henry. David, who were your greatest inspirations other than your mother?
I worked for 11 years for a man named John Detterding at GE, and he epitomized for me a gentleman and an ideal a boss, and eventually a friend. John was a former Marine, served in Korea during the Korean War, worked his way up in a long career at GE, more than 20 years, to become general manager of the real estate business, and I worked directly for him. But he was always very low-key, always a gentleman, very smart, very supportive of his employees. If we did something he thought was dumb, he wouldn't try to turn it down or embarrass you with it. He would simply say, okay, I'll go ahead and approve this loan, even though I think it's dumb. Please don't do it again. And with that kind of support, you could negotiate with customers and clients and deliver for them and still learn lessons. So I always thought that was a very good style of John's. I think I mentioned to you, Howard, the story about there were weeks on end where John left early, and everybody wondered whether he was getting a little lazy in his older age. And it turned out quite a period of time later, he was leaving and not telling anybody to go visit a very sick employee at the hospital. And he would do that religiously every day, and he would leave at 3:30. And other people may have thought he was goofing off or playing golf, but he wasn't. And he wasn't going to mention it or make a big deal about it. He just did it. You know, there's not a lot of people that would just do that.
You referred to that as strength of character. Is that how you perceive John?
Yeah, I do. I do. Wonderful man with wonderful integrity, wonderful strength of character, and just a role model for me and many others.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question that's probably going to be difficult for you to answer. This is not a time to be modest. Give me an example, a story about your strength of character. This is the curveball that I promised you.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That really is a tough one. As I mentioned to you, I was devoted to my mom. My mom had a very tough end of life with eventually dying of emphysema and lung cancer after being a heavy smoker. And when my father died, perhaps 6-7 years before that, I made it a point to be with her and call her at least every day. And I just felt that was important. I think that is part of character and part of who you are. Some people can't handle people that are ill, but I don't know. I just think that. So if you want a curveball answer, there's a curveball answer.
It's a curveball question. It's a curveball question. And I think it was a great answer. Do you ever believe your own press?
Not often. No. I I really don't. I mean, we've at both Kimco and GE, we made plenty of mistakes along the way. We are in a business where if you work for a company with staying power and you invest in good real estate, you can ride out these cycles. But I made plenty of dumb deals at GE and plenty of ill-timed investments at Kimco, too. So, no, I don't believe the press.
Professional regrets?
Not many, because it's worked out so well. But I do think we all come to forks in a road, and you have to think carefully which fork. My fork in a road, and after a drink, sometimes I wonder if I would have taken it, but early in my GE career, I was offered an opportunity to become a trustee and run the real estate piece of GE pension, which was much more of a, if you know the term, sinecure, a little bit more laid back, but very, very high profile, very high level position in GE. And Gary Wendt, who didn't particularly get along with GE Pension at that time, said, I don't want you to do this, and don't do this. You know, you shouldn't leave us, and so forth. And so I made the choice to stay at GE Capital, but it was a fork in the road in my career, and I'd be in a very different. I'd probably still be at GE if I had done that.
Hmm. a perfect professional moment. And let me give you an example. Unfortunately, in my memory, I can only think of one perfect job, one perfect moment where, although I'm not even sure how I figured it all out and how I worked with people and how it all came to be, but it just, by the time we were done, we all looked at each other and said, this was one extraordinary job that we did. We didn't even have to say it to each other. We could see it in our own eyes. Did you ever have one of those perfect projects or perfect moments?
Well, I think I mentioned to you, we were fortunate enough to be involved in the purchase of Marathon, which was a real estate company owned by the Canadian Pacific Railroad in the 90s. We bought all of their office buildings all across Canada. It was a very large deal, probably over $1 billion, and we bought these huge office towers for $35 a foot, something like that, at the bottom of the Canadian market. And the Canadian Pacific Railroad was looking to get some cash at the time, and I can remember using Jack Welch to call the head of the Canadian Pacific Railroad, who was a customer of GE's. They bought all their locomotives from GE, and Jack Welch assured the CEO of Canadian Pacific Railroad that we would close on time, and we would deliver on the purchase, which we subsequently did, and we made a small fortune on that particular deal. But it was an example of where all the pieces of GE came together. Who would have ever thought a locomotive customer would be a wonderful opportunity for us?
We're going to take a short break right now, after which we're going to talk about how you and Kimco weathered this latest economic downturn and the lessons that you learned from that. And then we're going to be wrapping up the show after that. So we'll be right back.
If you need anything with your company logo on it, you need Monogram Magic. T-shirts, ball caps, polo shirts, anything. Monogram Magic does it beautifully, does it right, and does it right on time. For over 20 years, Monogram Magic has produced corporate apparel your people will be proud to wear. Large orders or small, it's all about attention to detail. See for yourself. Here's the website, logostolife.com. That's L-O-G-O-S, the number 2, then L-I-F-E.com, logostolife.com. Do more business with your biggest clients. Techniques Marketing has perfected exciting new ways to increase your revenue with all your key accounts, way beyond trial and error. And we've done it with some of the biggest companies in America. Look, if you're happy with your numbers, great. If not, let's talk. Visit TechniquesMarketing.com, T-E-C-H, that's the tech, N-I-Q-U-E-S, there you've got the Neeks, TechniquesMarketing.com. For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio, via email to questions@CREradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
And we are back with today's very special guest, David Henry. So, David, as we have all weathered in one form or another this most recent economic and real estate downturn, tell me about how you and Kimco persevered.
Well, as I mentioned, if you're part of a very large company with a strong balance sheet, you can weather the inherent nature of the commercial real estate cycles. Now, this particular one, the last beginning 5 years ago, where you had a worldwide financial crisis on top of a normal cyclical real estate downturn, was particularly severe for many institutions, and And the REITs were no exception, but I will make the case that there was only one REIT that went into bankruptcy and it actually came out of bankruptcy. So REITs in general are built to go through the cycles with 50 cents of equity for every 50 cents of debt. So our balance sheets are pretty strong. In our case, it turned out right before the downturn, about 70% of our earnings came from what I would call recurring earnings and rents from our shopping centers. So that part of our portfolio held up very, very well. I think we lost only 1% of our NOI that was coming from the properties. What disappeared for us was 30% of our FFO or our income from the time, which came from what I would call transaction gains. For instance, we were in the merchant building business. We built shopping centers and we sold them right away, and that produced about $35 million of income every year. We also had a securities trading platform. We had a lending participating loan program where we earned profit participations and kickers on loans. So all of those businesses were very successful for a number of years and produced about 30% of our income. But instantly, that part of our business went to zero. We weren't building shopping centers, much less selling them at a profit, as an example. So the difference between recurring income and non-recurring or transaction income was a severe lesson for us. And you'll see Kimco, as well as most REITs now, focusing on the recurring income nature of their business. So the leases and the rents that come from our properties, rather than trying to make one-time gains by buying and selling things.
Do you see the non-recurring income coming back?
Oh, you know, real estate is always cyclical, and it will happen again. This one was painful, so it'll take a little longer, but that building will happen again. Merchant building will happen again. Opportunistic investments that result in one-time gains will come again. Lenders will forget. Companies will forget. They'll stretch the envelope. There's no question about it, but they used to say that commercial real estate has a 10-year cycle to it, and institutions have a 7-year memory, and I think there's some truth to that. So it'll come back, and it'll probably be as wild as it ever was. But those of us that have survived the cycles are a little smarter each time. It reminds me of that great bumper sticker in Texas. Dear God, promise me, if you'll give me one more real estate boom, I promise not to piss it away this time.
Oh, gosh, I remember talking about Texas in the mid-'80s. I mean, I was looking, I had another in-house position where I was also director of real estate, and we were going into Texas trying to do deals at 45,000-50,000 square feet in Houston. As a matter of fact, we did one in downtown Houston that was just, we were, I think, the biggest tenant signing a lease in Houston in 1986 or 87. And just 2 years earlier, landlords were paying us $1 million to move in. Rather than giving us free rent, they'd pay us $1 million to move into space. And then 2 years later, the lender had foreclosed and was asking us to leave. It was crazy.
Yeah, Texas was clearly a good example of how wild the swings can be. And I think every single bank in Texas went under in one form or fashion, except I'm trying to think of the bank that did make it. There was an interesting bank that survived, but almost everybody else was either taken over or went out of business.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. Is there a lesson or any lessons that you learned from this downturn that you didn't previously know?
Well, again, if we had to do it all over again, we'd pay much more attention to the recurring nature, and we would have, to the extent we made transaction income, we wouldn't have paid it out in dividends because it did force us to cut our dividend. So we would have taken that transaction income and put it to work in the business. If we ever get back into the development business, we will build and hold rather than build and sell from an earnings standpoint. We also learned that while we made some profitable investments outside of the shopping center world, our investors and shareholders and analysts didn't really want us doing that. So our investments in hotels and nursing homes and things like that, although they were successful, weren't appreciated, and we got a demerit from Wall Street.
And you always have to worry about Wall Street, which is one of the differences between being a public REIT and being a private real estate company. You have someone else you have to answer to, isn't that true?
Well, unfortunately, you get a report card every day in terms of your stock price, and so that's humbling and sobering, and you're always looking for ways to make sure your shareholders are happy.
We're approaching the end of this show, and this is where I get to ask you about what we talked about during the show. Oh, it's in a way a way for us to wrap things up. If there was one takeaway that listeners should get from the discussion, what is that takeaway that they should get?
Well, I would encourage everybody, especially younger people that perhaps aren't locked into big mortgages and family responsibilities and children, to try to make sure you're doing something you enjoy doing every day. If you're going to an office and you can't look at yourself in the mirror and say, I love what I do every day, try something else, especially while you can. There's too many people that get locked into careers and industries that they don't really enjoy. So if you don't like what you're doing every day, try something different while you can. I know it's a difficult balance, especially if you have responsibilities, but you shouldn't just accept as a given that you're not enjoying every day.
You're not just saying it. I think to a great extent you actually live that, because you spoke about your daughters and that they're pursuing what they want to do. Isn't that true?
Yes, I've got a lot of kids, and three of them are nurses, and it takes a special person to be a nurse. I mean, you know, you're talking about catheters, you're talking about all kinds of stuff like that most of us don't want to be involved in, but they're following what they want to do every day. I have five daughters. I have eight children in all, three boys and five girls, and I have three daughters that are pursuing nursing careers, and it takes a special person to be a nurse, and they really enjoy it, and they won't get extraordinarily wealthy doing it, but they will probably always have a job, and they will enjoy what they do.
Have you ever seen the show Fiddler on the Roof?
I have seen that. Yeah, sure.
Yes. Well, Tevye had five daughters. I said, why did I know you were going to say you had five daughters? Well, do you have any anything that you're going to or you're going to be speaking at over the next month or so?
Well, we're in the REIT industry. We're all off to San Francisco in the middle of the month at I think it's called REIT World, which is a large REIT conference, and I will be attending that and speaking, as well as having one-on-one sessions. So that's the most immediate thing I can think of, Howard.
Well, David, I really thank you. If I may just add one additional thing, my takeaway from this show is, you know, being personable, being a nice guy. And I think you personify that as far as I'm concerned. And I think that nice guys and good guys can, or gals, can finish first, and I think that you're a perfect example of that. And if there's anything that I can tell people is, you know, be genuine, be honest, and be nice. Don't fake it. You can be nice and really mean it. If there were any regrets that I had, I haven't always been as nice as I should have been, which is why sometimes talking with you frustrates me, because you seem nice all the time.
Well, believe me, my wife would not agree with that at all.
Yeah, that's because she knows you all too well. My wife thinks that I was grumpy last night, and you know what? She was right. But we have a considerable debt to our wives, if that isn't the most true thing. So with that, I wish everybody a great weekend.
Thanks, Howard.
Please listen again next time to CRE Radio with Howard Klein. Every live and recorded broadcast is accessible on your desktop, tablet, or smartphone at creradio.com, or in iTunes, just search for CRE Radio. Here's how to reach us with your questions, feedback, and show topics you'd like to hear about. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio, via email to questions@CREradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619 area 393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue. CRE Radio broadcasts are presented on an informational basis only, with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our listeners. Howard and his guests' conversations specifically do not offer legal advice. If you need legal advice, please consult your own attorney. Portions of the show may have been pre-recorded. Unauthorized editing or copying of the show without the express written consent of CRE Radio is strictly prohibited. All rights reserved.
And that's a wrap.